You are listening to Blessed and Bossed Up, presented by Anchored Media, an entrepreneurship podcast for Christians all about how to make God the CEO of your business. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, but well-equipped to live and build your destiny His way. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. Thank you so much to everybody who has purchased from our moving sale, the God is My CEO prayer journal, the planner by Anchored Media for your podcast, She is Uncompromising, a Christian woman's guide to mastering motherhood, business, and everything in between. And then, of course, our Business Meetings with God devotional, which is sold out again. Thank you so much. We still have some items left. Everything is only $5 plus shipping is still under $10 for any of the products. The God is My CEO prayer journal is limited edition. So once it's gone, it's gone. I'm not creating them again. I'm not ordering anymore. They're not available anywhere else. What I have in stock is what I have left. The planner by Anchored Media, I am going to bless some folks who purchased. I found that I still had like some ring lights. I still had some podcast microphones I saw in my move. So I'm going to bless some folks who purchased the planner with a microphone or a ring light. And I'm going to do it randomly. Also, for everybody who purchases a planner from Anchored Media, I have a podcast course on how to launch your podcast that I'm going to send out for free. I'm going to just send an email to everybody who purchases with the link so that you can do that course. And this course I loved in particular because it was very action-based and it wasn't like super information-based, because I feel like there's a ton of information online. If you Google or even ask ChatGPT how to start a podcast, you'll get a lot of information. But this course that I did was me teaching you how to apply the information that I give and the information that you're also likely to find. I give a lot of best practices on things that have worked with me launching and growing podcasts since 2019. And it's just a lot of valuable information. So I'm going to email that out to those who purchased the book as well, or the planner as well. I think there are like less than 50 prayer journals left. I can't remember how many planners we have, but I also have a deal going on because I want to bless any type of groups or folks who want to seek the Lord or launch your podcast together. If you purchase more than 10, the products themselves are free, and then you just pay for shipping, which is usually maybe 10, 20 bucks, depending on where it's going. So when you add more than 10 products to your cart, it automatically makes the order free. You only pay for shipping, and then I'll get all of those to you. So I think that covers it. The link is in the show notes. Once they're gone, they're gone, but I'm trying to get rid of all the inventory that I have left. And so, yeah. BlessedandBossedUp.com. The link is in the show notes. Grab your products. And thank you so much to everybody who's purchased thus far. Be on the lookout for tracking information. There's been a little delay with shipping because we moved and been trying to get situated and find the stuff that I need to print labels and all of that. So you should be getting your tracking into your inboxes shortly. And then, yeah. I hope that and pray that all of these products that you receive bless you and bless those of you who are buying them for others as well. We are coming to the end of our book club pick, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. The last few weeks, we have tackled one practice to an unhurried life at a time. We talked about silence and solitude as the first practice. We talked about the Sabbath as the second. We talked about simplicity as the third. And then this fourth and final practice is all about slowing. This chapter is one that I really took my time with, ironically, because this has been a focus of mine personally for quite some time. I told you guys how pace is a revelation that I got a few years ago where the Lord really needed me to slow down. I was at a place in my business where I was ready to make some significant changes because business was expensive. It was expensive financially and it was expensive in what it cost me personally. There were times where I would wake up, sit on the edge of my bed and just put my head in my hands like, I don't even want to face today. I don't want to open my laptop. I just want to throw all my devices somewhere in the closet, lock it, and just go sit by the beach or something. It was just a lot going on where building Anchor Media Studios at the time, I think that I had just had my second son. It was somewhere around his birth at that time. I had full-time employees. Things were just a lot. The studio was in a place where we were still building it, so I was putting a lot of money into it. And then I had issues even with the clients that I was holding where people would pay invoices late. I would have brands that would pay late and I had people that needed to be paid. It was just so much going on at the same time. And I took my problems to the Lord, and the Lord's solution was for me to not do more, not to strategize to solve my issues at that time, but his solution was for me to slow down and for me to reestablish pace. And while that was difficult, I trusted the Lord's guidance and made the tough decisions that I needed to make in order to do that. And that included laying off contractors, laying off my team, laying off clients. I think I kept maybe like 4 clients max, but it made for some very hard decisions that I cried through, but proved to be so necessary in order for me to operate at the pace that the Lord called me to. And now I feel like my pace has sped up a little bit because of the addition of law school, plus now us now being a family of 5, there are more responsibilities. But I don't believe that us operating at the pace of grace, the pace that the Lord calls us to, I don't think that that means that there's an absence of responsibilities. I think that pace is all about the way in which we approach those responsibilities, and the busyness of our lives and the things on our to-do list and our plates shouldn't dictate the pace in which we move. Our connection with the Lord, our following or being apprentices of Jesus, as the author says in this book, should dictate our pace and how we approach the various responsibilities and the tasks at hand. So this chapter in particular was knocking on my door. It was one that I was sitting with because, again, I feel like my natural inclination when I have a lot of responsibilities is to lock in and get things done. And that usually is from a place of hurry and striving and not from a place of abiding in dependence. And I find myself defaulting back to that sometimes. And the author talked about this here in the book about how these 4 practices that we've discussed are practices. There are things that we have to continue to try. That we live in a modern world, so there's always going to be that temptation. So we live in this modern world that wants us to go quick. And a lot of us have default settings of also living from a hurried place. So we have 2 things working against us, and we have to be intentional about slowing down, and we have to catch ourselves when we do speed up. I will always say self-awareness is one of the secrets to success, because if you can understand how your disposition or your temperament is opposite of how the Lord called you to live, then you can keep that top of mind and be able to course correct as necessary. So for me, I have symptoms that I've identified where I know that I'm moving outside of the will of God. Usually I get headaches. I feel stressed. I feel out of control. There's even this, not like heavy breathing to the point of panic attacks or anything, but like there's this sense of internal panting. I can't really describe it, but it's just almost as if my pace of breathing is a little quicker when I am moving from a hurried place. And so once I start noticing those things, like, man, I'm taking Tylenol way more than normal right now because I keep having these headaches, or I have this pace of my breathing that's a bit more quick than normal, this is an indicator that I need to slow down. Let me pause, put everything down, go sit with the Lord and recalibrate for a second and do better moving forward. So I hope that as we've gone through the three practices thus far, you've been able to identify and see parts of yourself that is not in alignment with the Sabbath or solitude and silence or simplicity. And you've been able to recognize maybe behaviors or symptoms within yourself of how you feel or think or act when you are moving from a hurried place, so that you can use those to redirect back into that place of peace, that place of slowness, that pace of stillness, that place of abiding. Now, for us as ambitious women, I think it's important for us to address a key aspect of our nature that catapults us into hurry. And that is our drive to succeed, our ambition to do more, build more, create more. This attribute of our personalities, it is a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because it allows us to accomplish great things. It's the reason why our trophies are so stacked. It's the reason why we have the degrees, we have the accolades, we have the salaries, we have the things. This is the reason why people admire us and want us to mentor them and give back in some way, because it is clear that our drive has attributed to a level of success that we're proud of, that other people admire, and that we can attribute to the goodness of God. And also, that same drive robs us from the settledness of being content. This is something that has been a prayer point of mine for years, because I'm always going to be driven. That's who I am. I'm not trying to be less ambitious. I'm not trying to be less driven. I have reconciled and am appreciative of the woman that I am. I don't want to be less me, but I want me to be surrendered to and submitted to the Lord. And a part of that is keeping what's useful about my ambition, and what's useful is applying it to the directions and the instructions of the Lord. Because once God tells you, hey, go do this, and you apply that drive and that work ethic to it, beautiful things happen. However, if you let her go rogue, destruction is what's next. In the last episode, when we covered simplicity, the author ended talking about contentment. We were already at time, so I thought it would be good to just pick it up here, especially as we go into the final principle of slowing. He says, I've been thinking about Paul's line in Philippians lately. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I hear people tear that line out of context all the time. They use it for raising money at the church, or getting that promotion, or beating cancer, or raising a family, all good things. But do you know what Paul was writing about in context? Contentment. The line right before that is as follows. I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. In context, Paul wasn't writing about overcoming some allegorical Goliath in our lives. He's writing about one of the greatest enemies of the human soul, before and after Edward Bernays, discontentment. That nagging feeling of always wanting more, not just more stuff, but more life. The next thing might not be a thing at all. It might be graduation or marriage or children or a better job or retirement or whatever it is for you on the horizon. We live with an inextinguishable discontent. It is what the poet of Ecclesiastes described as a chasing after the wind. Contentment isn't some Buddhist-like negation of all desire. It's living in such a way that your unfulfilled desires no longer curb your happiness. We all live with an unfulfilled desires. In this life, all our symphonies remain unfinished, but this doesn't mean that we can't live happy. The truth is, you can be happy right here, right now, through Christ who strengthens me, meaning through investing your resources in ongoing relational connection to Jesus. You can live a rich and satisfying life, whether you are rich or poor, single or married, infertile or counting the days until your four kids are out of the house. crushing it at your dream job or at a minimum wage job. Right now, you have everything that you need to live a happy, content life. You have access to the Father, to His loving attention. Who would have thought it's that easy of a yoke? This episode is brought to you by NerdWallet. Running a small business is tough. And when it's time to get a loan, it can feel impossible to find a lender that you can actually trust. Big banks say no. The internet, full of sketchy offers with sky-high rates and fine print that you can barely read. Whether you need help covering payroll, managing cash flow, or investing in growth, you deserve better. That's why I recommend the small business marketplace Fundera, powered by NerdWallet. It's a free, easy-to-use platform that lets you compare real financing offers from trusted lenders, all in one place. What I like is that you don't need the perfect credit to get started. No spam, no bait and switch, just personalized options that fit your business needs. If I needed a loan right now, this is exactly what I would use. And here's the best part. For a limited time, when you visit nerdwallet.com/blessed and fill out the no obligation form, you'll get VIP treatment and speak to a real person who knows all the ins and outs of small business lending. Don't risk your business on unreliable lenders. Go to nerdwallet.com/blessed to get the funding that you deserve. Fundera Inc., NMLS, ID number 1240038. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite. You all know how I feel about AI and how useful I believe it to be. Every business is asking the same question. How do we make AI work for us? The possibilities are endless, and guessing is too risky. NetSuite is the number one AI cloud ERP, trusted by over 43,000 businesses. It's a unified suite that brings your financials, inventory, commerce, HR, and CRM into a single source of truth. That connected data is what makes your AI smarter, so it doesn't just guess, it knows. Intelligently automates routine tasks, delivers actionable insights, helps you cut costs, and make fast AI-powered decisions with confidence. You've got total flexibility. From software and IT services to healthcare, equipment manufacturing, financial services, and many other great American industries, NetSuite delivers a customized solution for your business. This isn't another bolted-on tool. It's AI built into the systems that runs your business. Whether your company earns millions or even hundreds of millions, NetSuite helps you stay ahead of the pack. If I needed this product, this is exactly what I would use. If your revenues are at least in the seven figures, get our free business guide, Demystifying AI, at netsuite.com/blessed. The guide is free to you at netsuite.com/blessed. netsuite.com/blessed. This episode is brought to you by IXL. Y'all know in my house, we want a strict program when it comes to education. And just because the kids are out of school this summer does not mean learning stops. We need to keep these skills fresh all summer long. And without regular practice, kids can lose momentum over summer break. IXL helps students stay sharp and confident so that they are ready for the next school year. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and help kids feel confident heading into the next school year. I use IXL every single day with my son. And now my middle child is going to preschool, so he's getting ready to use IXL this summer as well. My preschooler needs to be school ready, building his skills, getting his confidence up in challenging subjects, and my oldest needs to stay sharp. And I love how they can both use the platform, and it is organized by each of their grade levels and is easy tracking throughout the summer so I could keep up with what each one of them is doing. Studies show that kids who use IXL score higher on tests, and that's been proven in all 50 states. IXL adapts to each child's level, pace, and learning needs. One subscription covers everything, pre-K through 12th grade for all the kids in your home. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Blessed and Bossed Up listeners get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Contentment has been a prayer point of mine for some years. And I didn't realize that I had gotten to a place of contentment. And it's not to say that I'm just satisfied and I don't have a desire for more. I mean, as the author said, that desire is always going to be there. As I said, that drive and ambition is a part of who I am. So there's always going to be a desire. However, you can hold space for that and still be content. Because in my opinion, the evidence of content is when there is a level of restraint to where you can want to grow your business to the next income level. Let's say you want to get to your first six figures, or you want to get to a half a million, or you want to get to a million plus in your business. You can want that and desire that. But contentment says, I'm not going to go strive after that. I'm not going to figure out how to get there. Contentment says, I am okay with where I am right now because I have access to the Lord. And the Lord will give me wisdom and strategy on how to get to that income level in due time, in His time. And in the meantime, I'm going to continue to do the things that He's called me to do right now, be a good steward over what He's blessed me with right now, and then make adjustments as He sees fit when He gives them to me. That's the way in which you live when you maintain that desire but still have contentment. It comes with restraint. You're not figuring things out. You're being diligent and a good steward over where you are currently. You're being appreciative and present with what you have currently while keeping an ear open to how the Lord wants you to lead next. And that may come from a divine download. That may come from a new client coming in and you taking it to the Lord saying, hey, God, this person wants me to come speak at this event, or this person wants to hire me to do whatever your area of expertise is. And this is coming with a significant paycheck. This will actually get me to my first six, my half a mil, my million plus. But while I would love that, let me take a second and check with you. Is this you? Is this a green light? Or do I need to let this go? And then you obey whatever the Lord says. That is the way that you operate and you do business, holding space for your ambition while still being content. So for me, this has been my prayer for years, for me to be content, because I found myself in a toxic ambition at some point. And this is the reality of many of us, where our drive can be rooted in some sort of trauma, to where for me growing up, I felt like the way in which people showed up for me was when I was accomplishing something. Because of my upbringing, I didn't feel valuable just being Tatum. I only felt valuable when there was a trophy, because I felt like the only time people showed up for me or acknowledged me or cheered for me in any way was at a graduation, was at a ceremony, was at a this, and was at a that. I couldn't just be me and that be worth celebrating. And so that fueled my desire to continue to achieve more and obtain these levels of success and all of that. And so as I healed, I realized that, okay, I still am ambitious and driven, but my identity isn't in it anymore. And so then I started to ask the Lord for contentment, because I wanted to continue to grow, but from a healthy place and not having my identity in what I can accomplish. And so, again, that's been like a very intentional prayer point of mine for a lot of years. And it wasn't until recently where, because I always say that we pray for things and we ask the Lord to heal us and we see evidence of being healed. But I feel like you really know that you're healed when an opportunity comes for you to react in a way that is more consistent with the past you. So recently when I decided to go to law school. And for those of you who are new here, I decided to go to law school because the Lord told me to. This wasn't something that I came up with. I was cool. I was fine. The Lord told me to go. And I obeyed him. And here we are about to go into year two. So when I told my friends and family, a lot of my friends, I love my friends who know the Lord because they always respond to me from a godly place. And I really appreciate that. But we have family and folks that we love who are not necessarily spirit led. And I remember one of my family members was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense because you're always trying to accomplish something. You're always trying to get some type of degree. And I was like, interesting. But internally, I was offended. I let it slide with them. I didn't make a big fuss. But I was offended because it felt like a slap in the face to a lot of the healing and the work that the Lord has done in me. But giving that person grace, these aren't conversations that I've necessarily have had with them. So to them, it just looks like another trophy, which is fine. But it also made me sit and make sure that this wasn't something that I was doing from a place of ambition. And so when I went back and kind of sat with my reaction to that and how I was feeling about it and sat with it in prayer and then kind of did a recap in my mind of the whole process of deciding to go to school, taking the LSAT, applying, and all of the steps that go into being a law student. It was in that moment of prayer and reflection where I realized, like, man, this is that level of contentment that I've been praying for. When the Lord told me to go to school, I was in a place. I told y'all about the place where he told me to slow down. This was about a year after that. And I was in a place where I was significantly downsized in my business. My son, my middle son, was with me full time. We had like a whole homeschool type of scenario where my day to day wasn't at that place anymore, sitting on the edge of my bed, not wanting to open my computer. I was at a place where I was with my son all day, teaching him his ABCs, teaching him his colors, just totally focused on him, going to classes at the library with him, little music and movement classes for toddlers. I was at the place where I was volunteering and donating things to my oldest son's classroom and built a great relationship with his teachers at his school, making sure that, as I told y'all, that's my genius, my oldest son. And so I have to fight for I had to fight a lot for his school to give him the resources that he needed as a gifted child and fight against them trying to put him in a box that was stifling his growth. And so I'm at the school advocating for him, having the time, the resources, the freedom. I still had this podcast, was getting even more sponsors where I'm seeing my income grow, but my work, day-to-day work that I'm putting in, being significantly less. I had my mentorship program where I was mentoring podcasters and helping them launch their shows. That was a low lift for me as far as labor, but it was highly, highly rewarding. And so I was at a place. So me deciding to go to law school and the Lord giving me that instruction came from a place where I was good, or came at a time, excuse me, where I was good. And so as I like reflected, and then at the time, I had also gotten pregnant with my daughter. And so here's another promise fulfilled where I've always prayed and asked the Lord for a daughter in particular, and not off no weird gender preference stuff. But I had the desire to provide a life for a little girl that I wish somebody provided for me. I have a desire to intentionally teach her and cultivate in her things that I had to struggle through as an adult. There are things about womanhood that I'm still learning that I wasn't necessarily taught. It just had to be me, the Holy Spirit, and my Bible, or me learning from mentors or reading books, things that I just had to figure out that I want to intentionally cultivate and plant those seeds in her. And then also just enjoy her. And the Lord has blessed me with that, blessed me with a little girl who looks exactly like me. And I think that that is a beautiful thing, not just in she has my whole face, but in think the Lord is honoring and healing a part of me through me raising her. And he knew that I needed that. So I say all that to say I was in such a beautiful place when I got this assignment. And as I sat with my offense to my family members' comments, I came to the realization of, no, that is contentment. Contentment, what I've been praying for is me to be in a space where, sure, I desired more because I'm me, right? However, I was okay with where I was, but I'm open to what the Lord had me to do next. And so what he had me to do next just happens to be something that is prestigious or something that is admired by others. If the Lord would have told me to go and climb Mount Kilimanjaro, like, I would have done that as well. I'm sure that would have been probably harder than law school, but I would have done that as well. But in me investigating my feelings to that comment, I was able to realize, like, man, this is contentment. And I thank you, Lord, for allowing me to get to that place, because now I'm moving into this new assignment with a level of peace and groundedness, not from a level of striving. And I've seen the fruit of that in this first year in school, and I'll share things as relevant. But when it comes to contentment, if this is not a prayer for you, if this is not something that you think about often, but you realize is necessary, one, I suggest that you read Ecclesiastes because it puts a lot in perspective. And because the way in which Ecclesiastes is written, I think that you could even just go to like the Bible app on your phone and play the audio version. I don't even think Ecclesiastes is something you need a full study Bible for, but it's something that you should read. It's a text that you should read, that you should listen to, that you should familiarize yourself with, because it keeps things in perspective. So if you're not praying for contentment, put that at the top of your prayer list, because that just baseline is going to eliminate a lot of hurry. The author here is talking about these different practices, and I feel like contentment probably should have been its own practice in and of itself, but I see why it wasn't. Put that on your list of ways that you're going to eliminate hurry from your life. You're going to focus on praying about contentment. And you're going to ask the Lord to show you why you're discontent. Ask the Lord to heal the parts of you that are fueling this discontentment. And then be open to how he transforms you over time. And I promise you, you'll wake up one day or you'll have a reaction that will cause you to investigate your feelings a little bit and realize, like, man, I have grown. This is an area that the Lord is moving in. And then that's going to just fuel your gratitude, your contentment, and your commitment to him moving forward. So the author now introduces the fourth practice of unhurrying your life, slowing. He talks about how he's very type A, scheduled, to-do list, regimented. He likes to get things done. And with us with type A personalities, hurry, unfortunately, is like at our baseline sometimes. And so he talked about how difficult it could be to adapt this idea of slowing down, especially with us living in this world of hyper efficiency. And I totally could relate to that, because I remember finding myself in positions where I want to do something faster. And since reading this book, I always now question myself of, why does this have to be efficient, though, Tatum? Why do you have to cook dinner in the most efficient way to get it done in 30 minutes? You got time. BJ done took the kids to the park. There's no rush. Take your time. If you cook this thing later than you should have, and so that causes dinner to be a little late, okay. Like, drink some water and wait. Like, it's cool. Eat a snack. This episode is brought to you by Built. We can all agree that right now, everything costs way too much, especially housing. Rent, mortgage, it doesn't matter which one you're paying, it stings every month. However, Built made it feel a little bit better. Let me explain. Built started out rewarding members on their rent. Now, as of 2026, Built members can earn points on mortgage payments wherever they live. Every housing payment earns you points that you can use towards flights with top travel partners like Hyatt and United, Lyft rides, Amazon.com purchases, and so much more. Personally, I'm redeeming my points for these trips. It is summertime, school's over, and your girl want to be outside. Not family trips either, solo or with my man. But here's what I think is the most underrated part. Built members also get access to a neighborhood concierge. It can make restaurant reservations, book fitness classes, and find new local spots, all while being rewarded. At more than 45,000 merchant partners, it's like having a personal assistant baked into where you live. It's simple. Being a renter and now owning a home is better with Built. Join the membership for where you live at joinbuilt.com/blessed. That's joinbuilt.com/blessed. Make sure to use our URL so that they know that we sent you. This episode is brought to you by Super.com. You know that feeling when your credit score quietly gets in the way? A declined card, a loan that costs way more than it should. It's frustrating. And for a lot of people, the problem isn't that they're bad with money, it's that the system just isn't giving them credit for what they're already doing. That's why I want to talk about Super.com's credit building program. With Super Plus membership, you get access to the Super.com card. And here's the part that I love. It gives you a $5,000 credit usage boost. This isn't money that you spend. It's reported to the bureaus as available credit that you're not using, which can lower your utilization ratio and move your score in the right direction. You can also report your on-time rent payments, including up to 2 years of past rent, to all three major credit bureaus, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. The biggest bill that you pay every month can finally start working for you. No hard credit checks to apply, 0% APR, and you can track your progress right inside the app. Start building your credit the easy way. Go to super.com/credit right now to see how Super Plus can help you boost your credit score. That's super.com/credit. Credit building features are only available to the Super Plus members. Impact on your credit score may vary. Super.com cannot control factors outside of their services that may impact your credit. Visit super.com for more details. And so I love that in this chapter, he gives us very practical things that we can implement to practice slowing down. I think we're all clear that we need to slow down, but what we need is ideas and practical tips to help us do so on a regular basis so that we get more comfortable with it. Because it's uncomfortable to slow down. Because when we are focused on efficiency, we are more productive. We get more done, and that gives us that dopamine hit because we feel accomplished. But the principle of living an unhurried life is going to require us to give that up. So the author gives us 20 tools or 20 tips that we can practice in order to slow down. He introduces it by saying, Jesus lived in a village in the first century, not a city in the 21st. Jesus didn't drive a car or field text messages, and a late night Taco Bell run wasn't an option. What follows, in reference to his tips, are modern practices based on my attempt at following Jesus while living in a city, raising a family, having a smartphone, Wi-Fi access, etc. Could it be that we need few new spiritual disciplines to survive the modern world? Counter habits to wage war against what the futurist David Zach called hyper-living, skimming along the surface of life. So while you won't find the following rules on any standard list of spiritual disciplines, you will find more and more teachers of the way talking about it as a protest against the new normal of hyper-living. John Ortberg and Richard Foster both labeled this emerging practice the spiritual discipline of slowing. Ortberg defined it as cultivating patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we simply have to wait. Cultivating patience. Child, this made me this made me cringe. Cultivating patience by deliberately choosing to place ourselves in positions where we simply have to wait. This is so funny because patience is something that I'm trying to teach one of my kids. And one of the ways that I do it is I make him wait for things. So if there's something he asked me for and I have it and I can give it to him right then and there, I make him wait just for waiting's sake because I want him to learn patience. It drives him crazy. And so while I'm reading this, I'm laughing to myself and cringing because I do this to teach my children how to be patient. But this stresses me out because I hypocritically lack patience as well. Nevertheless, the basic idea, he says, behind the practice of slowing is this: slow down your body, slow down your life. We are embodied creatures, whole people. Our minds are the portals to our whole persons. So how we think has all sorts of ramifications of how we experience life through God. But the mind is not the only portal. This is why, for example, so few Westerners fast anymore. What was once a core practice for the way of Jesus has fallen by the wayside. We can't fathom a practice that comes at life change through our stomachs. We're so used to books and podcasts and university lectures and teachings at church that we often forget we are not just brains on legs. We're whole people, holistic, integrated, complex, and full of a dizzying amount of energy. So our apprenticeships to Jesus have to be whole person endeavors. Mind and body. And if we can slow down both, the pace at which we think and the pace at which we move our bodies through the world, maybe we can slow down our souls to a place in which they can taste and see that the Lord is good and that life in His world is good too. That said, here are 20 ideas for slowing down the overall pace of your life. Let's start with something most of us do daily: drive a car. Even if you live in the city like me and walk or ride your bike most days, the odds are you still drive on a semi-regular basis. Now, as I go through this list, I know some of y'all are going to roll your eyes at a few of these. Fine, fair. These are very fair reactions. Like I said, when he talked about making yourself wait for the sake of waiting, I cringed. But that's because patience is something that I have to definitely practice because I can be impatient. Some of these things that he's saying here, I know is going to make y'all roll your eyes, but it's okay. When we pay attention to our reactions to things, usually they reveal areas that we need to take to the Lord in prayer and that we need to be mindful about working on. The first tip that he gave in reference to driving is to drive the speed limit. Now, this isn't one that I necessarily struggle with. When I was in high school, I had a classmate who died from a car accident, speeding. He got into a car accident and he died. And ever since then, I have been, and that actually created a slight fear of driving for me. I didn't get my driver's license until I was like 20 or 21. I had a learner's permit for a long time, but I didn't want to drive on my own because of having this friend who got into a car accident. Now, to this day, I don't speed. I don't drive slow. But I definitely don't speed because in my mind, there is a control factor I think contributes to it, because I feel like if I get into an accident or something happens, I have less control the faster I'm going. But I don't think that a car accident is worth it at all. So I'm definitely somebody who drives the speed limit. So this one don't bother me as much. For those of y'all who like to race in them cars and zoom, zoom, drive the speed limit. He said the sign indicates 25 miles per hour, drive 25 miles per hour, not 30, not 33. And also not below the speed limit, because that's just annoying, but right on the money. He says, sometimes I do silly things like this just to detox my brain from the addiction to dopamine and the instant gratification of a life of speed. Number two, he says, get into the slow lane. This one I can't get with, because like, child, please, that's too slow. I'm going to be in the middle. Sometimes I'm going to get in the left, but where I won't be is the right with grandma now. But he says, settle in, feel the wheel, the road, watch the scenery pass. Use it as a chance to practice presence to God, to the world, to your own soul. If you think about it, driving is a great time to pray. Some of my best prayer at times are on the morning car rides. I can agree that driving is a great time to pray, and it's tough to do that when you're speeding. I also think you could pray going the speed limit. You don't got to be in the slow lane to pray, but hey, y'all should try it though. Y'all who are the type to speed, go to the slow lane and see how you feel and see how much you can pray from there. Number three, come to a full stop at stop signs. In DC in particular, you'll get a ticket if you don't come to a full stop. I learned that recently because I definitely hit a little slowdown, kept it pushing, and they sent that ticket right in the mail with a video where I couldn't even dispute it. Number four, this is a big one. Don't text and drive. I should not need to say this. It is, well, illegal after all, and the cause of thousands of deaths a year. Our hurry is literally killing us. But there's a reason most of us text and drive, even when we know it's illegal and a life and death issue. We're so addicted to the dopamine hit that is our phones that we literally can't just sit in our cars and listen to music or the news or pray or talk with our passengers. We have to reach for the phones and risk our necks and those of others to get our fix. Number five, show up 10 minutes early for an appointment. Sans phone. What could you do with the 10 full leisurely minutes? Bring back coffee table magazines from the late 90s? Chat with a human being waiting beside you? Read a book? Here's an idea. What if you prayed? I think that's a good one. Leaving your phone, showing up somewhere early, and just taking in your surroundings. You don't even have to talk to anybody next to you. I'm an introvert. The last thing I'm finna do is go set an appointment and just talk to somebody next to me. But I will like look at what's on the TV or grab a magazine or just listen to people's conversations, look around. I think that this is a good practice to be present. Now, number six is a hard no for me. I'm going to say it anyway because maybe it's one that you say I'm going to try this, but I'm telling you for me, absolutely not. No questions asked. I'm not even being open-minded to this one. It says, get in the longest checkout line at the grocery store. First of all, I don't even go in the grocery store. Like, I am an Instacart girly. I went to the store this past weekend because we just moved. So I wanted to see what was actually in these grocery stores. And I wanted to compare their prices to Instacart because Instacart sometimes will up a price like a dollar or so in addition to their fees of delivering and all of that. So every now and then I'll go into the store to see what they got and kind of get a feel for the price difference. So I know if I'm going to pay extra, I want to know how much extra and then be able to decide if it's worth it. Because even if you pick up, sometimes the pricing of the things will be higher. So I go into the grocery store this past week. I'll probably go next week because I want to check out a few in the area and so that I know where I'm ordering from on Instacart. But I am not a go in the grocery store girly. So not only is the act of just going into the grocery store something I don't necessarily want to do, standing in the longest line is insane. But here's his explanation. He says, you're all hating on me now. Absolutely. In an efficiency-obsessed culture, why would we do that? That's literally wasting time on purpose. Well, here's why I do it. Sometimes, not always. It's a way to slow down my life and deal with the hurry in my soul. It gives me a few minutes to come off the drug of speed, to pray, to take an inventory of my emotional and spiritual vitals. And when I get up to the cashier, to express the love of the Father towards him or her, simply by saying hello, asking a few questions, and saying thank you, rather than my default of paying for my items while texting with work, while podcasting via headphones, all while the treating the poor cashier like an ATM instead of a soul. But here's the deeper motivation. It's wise to regularly deny ourselves from getting what we want, whether through a practice as intense as fasting or as minor as picking the longest checkout line. That way, when somebody else denies us from getting what we want, we don't respond with anger. We're already acclimated. We don't have to get our way to be happy. Naturally, this takes a while for most of us. So start small at aisle three. Yeah, I hear you, but no. No, I would rather just sit on my porch and smell the fresh air and see the dogs walk by and things like that. I'm not doing that. So, but I read it so that those of you who are listening can try it should you feel led. But just know who you won't see at the grocery store, and that's your girl. Number seven. Turn your smartphone, and this is what I actually actively started doing after reading it. turn your smartphone into a dumb phone. A number of years ago, Jake Knapp's article, My Year with a Distraction-Free iPhone and How to Start Your Own Experiment, hit the internet like wildfire, and a lot of us joined the movement. Okay, there's no movement, just my friend Josh and me, but we're into it. Since the catchphrase has become the dumb phone, as in, well, you get it, there's no official checklist, but here's what we suggest. Take email off your phone. Take all social media off your phone, transfer it to a desktop, and schedule set times to check it each day, or ideally each week. This one is relatively easy for me. I delete social media off my phone all the time and go months without it. So that one I found, though, to be really helpful. So I highly suggest that. In addition to taking email off your phone, delete all notifications, including those for text. I set my phone so I have to, one, unlock it, and two, click on the text message box, to three, even see if I have any text messages. That was a game changer. Yeah, that's a big one for me too. When my phone is on like focus mode, like the iPhones have, it doesn't even show you if you have a text. And I love that, because if I see the notification, I'm more likely to go click to see who texts me. So cutting that off is huge. And I'll tell you guys what I did after reading this once we finish. He says, ditch the news apps, or at least news alerts. They are the devil. He says, delete every app you don't need or that doesn't make your life seriously easier, and keep all the wonder apps that make life so much easier. Maps, calculator, Alaska Airlines, I think that's a joke, etc. What Knapp put in the box and labeled the future. Consolidate said apps into a few simple boxes so your home screen is free and clear. Finally, set your phone to grayscale mode. This does something neurobiologically that I'm not smart enough to explain, something to do with decreasing dopamine addiction. Google it. If right now you're thinking, why don't you just get a flip phone? Point taken. So number 8, get a flip phone or ditch your cell phone altogether. Number 9, parent your phone. Put it to bed before you and make it sleep in. T, which is his wife, and my phones go to bed at the same time as our kids, 8:30 p.m. sharp. We literally set them to airplane mode and put them in a drawer in the kitchen. Otherwise, we burn time and end up frying our brains with blue screens rather than winding down for bed with a good book or, you know, couple stuff. Number 10, keep your phone off until after your morning quiet time. And I'm actually going to stop at number 10 for the sake of time. Keep your phone off until after your morning quiet time. The stats are ominous. 75% of people sleep next to their phones, and 90% of us check our phones immediately upon waking. I can't think of a worse way to start my day than a text from my work, a glance at an email, a quick, in quotation, scroll through social media, and a news alert about the day's outrage. This is a surefire recipe for anger, not love. Misery, not joy, and definitely not peace. I think his tips as it relates to the phone is spot on. And after I read this, I went into my phone and I did this. I feel like the first time I read this book, I did this, but I just have different things going on now versus then. I went into my phone and, you know, iPhone, you create these specific settings for do not disturb or focus mode or whatever. And I created a mode called paste, but I think I'm gonna change it to like presence or whatever, but I just named it something really quick that signals the purpose of it, which is for me to be more present. And I have it set, and my phone was already set to where I would, it goes on DND at like 8 p.m. So I don't get any notifications from anybody about anything, because at that point my kids are home and in bed, my husband's home. Anybody who would need to reach me urgently is with me in the house. So I don't care about anything else that comes through my phone, but I will still be on my phone, maybe on social media or looking at clothes or just searching something. So I was still using my phone. So I think what I'm going to do now is take him up on what he said he and his wife does, which is put their phones to bed when they put the kids to bed. I'm going to try that. I'm going to talk to BJ about it. I'm going to try that. But what I did do was I set my phone to where the same way I get no notifications in the after 8 p.m., I'm going to do that during the day. The notifications I'm going to let through are my husband, of course, my kids' camp, so they can reach me. So this is like during the summer, and then during the school year, their school can call and reach me. I'll probably set times to check my emails, but I think I'm going to tell the school only reach me via phone versus email. So that way I can eliminate the need of the email on my phone altogether. Tell the school my preferred way to contact me is phone. Allow the school to bypass my settings to be able to call me. So that's something that I'm going to do. I'm only going to let through notifications for like the studio, because the studio is listed on PeerSpace, and we get notifications. And they also, in order for me to maintain my host power host status, I have to have a certain response time and ratings and all of that. And also, it's best practice to respond quickly to inquiries, because the faster they book with you, they won't book with anybody else. So I have to let the PeerSpace notifications come through, because I need to respond to those quickly. So I'm gonna let those come through, and that's it. I don't really see a need for any other notifications to hit my phone, and I don't see a need for my phone not to go in a drawer at night. And the good thing about like my business partner and I for the studio, we operate on different time zones. I'm a morning person, she's a night person. So I can clock out, and then she can answer any inquiries after 8 p.m. because she's up late anyway. And then I'll pick back up when I wake up at like 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. So I just sat there and I was thinking about just the reality of life, what actually can go, and dumbed my phone down to the bare necessities. I started deleting a whole bunch of stuff, especially things like Amazon, who sends me notifications of deals that are distracting and tempting me into buying stuff I don't need. But really just sat and took inventory on my device and created rules similar to, or using the guidelines of what he discussed on how to use my phone. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that impacts things moving forward. So just sharing with you guys what I did to give context to what he's talking about, so that you can maybe have some ideas on how to dumb down your phone as well. I'm not getting a flip phone. I don't think I can go back to pressing one button 3 times to get to the different letters. Those of y'all who are not millennials, my Gen Zers, y'all probably don't know how to text on a flip phone. But before, we used to have to, if you had like a BlackBerry, not a BlackBerry, if you had like one of those T-Mobile Sidekicks, it was like kind of a full keyboard. But if you had like a flip phone, I had a Razor in middle school, and that's when we first started texting. You had to hit 1 3 times to get to C, and then hit 1 again. Then you had to wait for C to settle. Then you had to hit 1 again to get A. And then you had to wait for A to settle, and you had to hit 1 twice to get to B. Like, that's how we texted. Imagine sending them paragraphs that we send now on a flip phone. It wouldn't happen. I remember when I was growing up, the minutes were only free on your phone after a certain period of time. They done messed around and gave us these free minutes. And now we own these phones even longer. So we got to take it back to the 99s and 2000s when it comes to this technology. But nevertheless, these are some great ideas that he gave. Very practical. There are about 10 more. And there's some points in his epilogue that I want to cover. So we'll pick that up in the next episode. But I pray that these gave you some very practical things for you to practice over the next week or so, and to really take into consideration as you look to eliminate hurry from your life. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. I love you guys, and I'll see you in the next one.